You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things U Talk football and basketball.
Welcome to this episode of the Ute Talk podcast. This is Grant Bagby from Torn by Sports. Joining me, as always, my co-host, Joseph
Silverswag. How's everybody doing today? We've got some fancy new gear here. You can't see it, but we feel very professional with our microphone and our headphone and stuff like that. So,
and ultimately, some better audio quality for our listeners. And no more technical difficulties. No one-minute warning shouts that we podcasting source. So we should have a much smoother running show. We'll see how it goes. No guarantees, obviously.
It's like we've gone from a kiddie pool that we fill up with the hose to like a hot tub with jets on. So sit back and relax and enjoy your spa U-Talk podcast experience.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be consoling anyone. That's the problem.
No,
not today.
Nothing will. Nothing will.
And pardon me, I'll just give everyone warning. I'm battling the cold. So the voice is a little, it is starting to go. But all right, let's start with our quick hitters as we always do, and review what happened in Pac-12 football last week. So I'll just start off at the top. Last Thursday, in a thriller, Stanford pulls out the win against Oregon State. I mean,
what's unbelievable is how Oregon State finds a way to lose every single game. I mean, they played better than Stanford and should have won that game. They're just like, let's lose it. That way we can really keep a nice clean, haven't beaten FBS team in 1,000 years. Slate going. That streak is still alive somehow. I'm shocked how bad they are. It's amazing to me.
I honestly was cheering for Oregon State to pull off. Get a win for the new coach, who was doing all right. Granted, he needs to pick up his speed when trying to call for a timeout.
Yes, very much. But
So then Washington crushes UCLA 44-23, giving up 169 yards and a TD to Miles Gaskin. Shout out to Zach Moss, who hopefully will have the same kind of production Friday.
Better. We'll talk about that, man. He better. They gotta start running the ball a little bit more. We'll talk about it.
And then Washington State loses to Arizona, and thank heavens Khalil Tate did not start when the Utes played them. We can hold on to that win for our strength of schedule and everything else.
It is shaping up to be a good win, certainly the best Utah has, which isn't saying much considering who else they've beaten. But it's a good win, and they can hang their hat on it. Khalil Tate or no Khalil Tate, there's a lot of other good things about that Arizona team.
USC beats Arizona State in what should be expected, 48-17, rebounding from their Irish loss. And then just to hurry it up, Colorado beats up on Cal, 44-28.
Montez had a great game. Colorado quarterback, his first good game of the season there.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, our other quick hitter is thinking of calling it the Kyle Kuzma tracker.
Yeah, right? I think we got to touch in on what Kyle Kuzma's up to every week. Last night, Halloween, he went 6-for-8, 16 points. He was, 4-for-4 from 3, which is where he gets his, that's a really good night for him because he's not a 100% three-point shooter. He's the real deal. What I want to know is, what are Utah fans Jazz fans going to do when the Lakers get really, really good because they sign LeBron James and they got Lonzo Ball, who we all love to hate because his dad's with something or other, and then they got Kyle Kuzma, the U, and it's the Lakers, and we're supposed to hate them, but the reason they're so good is because of Kyle Kuzma. What are you guys going to do? I mean, I don't have a dog in the fight. I'm not a huge NBA guy. I like to watch what the Utes are up to, and that's about it, but I'm interested to see how you Jazz fans handle rooting for the Lakers when they're the Western powerhouse with LeBron James and the whole nine?
As an NBA fan, let's pump the brakes on LeBron to L.A.
Oh, he's first. Wishing everybody a happy birthday. It's happening. It's happening. It's already done.
Well, let's get over our – never mind. This whole episode could end up being depressing if I talk the whole time. But, you know, in reviewing our dismal loss to Oregon – there's one thing that I'm worried about, and it's the Battle of the Trenches, and even more so, I mean, it made me think of the, gosh, what is the name of the song? It's Where Have All the Cowboys Gone by Paul Cole back in the day. You know, where have all the linemen gone, right? I know we lost four to the NFL, but our D-line, like, and here's where I get frustrated with coaching staffs, and I say that it's their job to manage expectations. Whittingham, Scally, all of these coaches have been telling us how deep the D line is, and it's, and then even the, you know, media people out there ranking it fifth in the nation before the season, and all kinds of stuff. And now our defensive line can't set an edge. Period. I mean, I miss Hunter Dimmick. The guy was so technically sound. Yes, he owns the stats record. I don't feel like he was anything flashy last year, but the dude, he set the edge. He was technically sound. He'd get the pressure on the quarterback. Now, who's doing that for the Utes?
People talk about the ends a lot, and they're the ones who rack up the stats, so I understand that. But what stands out to me, even though you're seeing the game be lost on the edges, I feel like it's the defensive tackles who aren't doing their job. The whole defense starts with those two guys and builds on the idea that an offense is going to need to dedicate three or four offensive linemen to those two guys every single play. And when that doesn't happen, you get your tackle gets to go one-on-one with the defensive ends, and our defensive ends are technically sound and they're well coached, but they're not those like freakish players that you see a lot of times in the SEC, or the DeForest Buckner at Oregon had, who could just beat anybody one-on-one. They're not that physically dominant kind of player, and Utah's never really tried to recruit that kind of player who, you know, they don't go out looking for the 6'7", 275-pound guy. They pick up a 6'3", 6'4 linebacker, and they teach him what to do, and they say, you know, you're going to be able to pin your ears back on third down, you're going to get your sacks. And that only works if the defensive tackles are doing what they're supposed to do. And I can't believe I'm saying this about Filippo Mokafisi and Lo'olo Tulele, but they aren't playing well. I think Fotu is the best defensive tackle on the team. I think Pennicini is better. I'd rather see Fotu and Pennicini in the middle than to start the game than Lowell and Flip. And that's a crazy thing to say, but I wonder if the coaches haven't invested so much in these two guys and been so excited about what they were going to do that they're not really able to see that they're not performing, and that the idea of starting somebody else in place of who's supposed to be the cornerstone of the defense. Think about, 300 something yards to Oregon and Arizona State just the same. Every single running back over 7 yards a carry. Like, that's totally unacceptable. And I think that you need to make a change of personnel, if nothing else, but to make the point that it's not good enough.
Yeah, no, I mean, it isn't. I mean, it's sad, really. I mean, this is supposed to be the D-line. This is Utah's strength, and right now it's Utah's weakness. I mean, that's something that's been bothering us. People have been criticizing the secondary and everything. I was like, if the secondary is having to make tackles, they have to make tackles. I mean, they shouldn't be making the tackles to begin with.
I think the secondary is one of the best in the Pac-12.
Yeah, they've been doing great.
They were set for years with these guys. They're really, really good players. But I think you got to change out everybody on that line. I think Anai's probably having the best season of anybody. He didn't have a great game last week, but by any stretch. But
still a sophomore.
But I think he's having the best season. But I'd like to see Anai, Pennicini, Fotu, and somebody else, Tupai,
even
Devere Hamilton, or
what about Flip there? If I remember
he
played the end against Arizona, and we had our great game against them.
Yeah,
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, something's got to change. And
then you got to can Cody Barton and push Chase Hansen up to linebacker, because not because he's perfect linebacker, but because he's going to be a better player at linebacker than anybody else you have in that second linebacker spot. And then get Afia and Kryon Ballard on the field and hope that they can hold up. But this front seven is playing badly, and I think that you've got to put in as many new faces as you can and see if you can't win some games and stop the run that way. And we're not going to find out about it against UCLA because they can't run the ball and they're not going to try. It's going to be interesting to see the secondary get tested by a team that just doesn't run. So they kind of don't have a choice but to play strength against strength. It'll be interesting to see if they can do it. That is, if UCLA can do it.
Well, the fact that I opened up the ESPN app on Monday, went to the Utah Utes page to find out what the Vegas had set the line at, and it was even, says something about where the Utah season has gone against UCLA. But the other thing, and you tell me this is, I mean, so the other part of the battle of the trenches is our offensive line. And as much as Witt's finally admitting that, you know, maybe we lost too much depth there by losing four NFLers, is that an excuse or isn't it? To me, I'm willing to say, okay, we've got a new offensive line. We lost four NFL caliber players. Like, I'm okay with it as long as we admit the weakness.
Yeah, I'm not as concerned about the offensive line long term. I think it's undoubtable that the 14 and 15 offensive line classes didn't live up to expectations. Either the left program or they're still on missions. I'm not sure that it's a smart play to recruit as many mission kids as Kyle Whittingham does once you get to the Pac-12 level, because you're using up scholarships for people who literally aren't on campus, who can't fill a need. That's maybe a topic for the off season where we can kind of devote a whole show to it, because it's interesting, and I think that maybe it's going to rub some people the wrong way, but it's something I've been thinking about all season long.
Hater.
But right. But the 16 class is good, and you've got an offensive lineman or sort of a special case. You've got to give him 12 months. If a guy's not 20 years old, he can't really play the position yet. And so you've got to wait and see what you've got, unless you've got a freak like Darren Paulo, who's been great. And I think Barton is who he is at this point, but he's a good player. He's going to be able to start a tackle until he graduates. He may get drafted or signed as a free agent in a later round. I don't think he's a player like Garrett Bowles by any stretch, but he's certainly good enough. I think Paulo's good enough. But we got to see what happens with Scott, with Peck, with Umama, with Amana, and then with some of these guys coming in next year. If that works, that could all develop, and that can be something that's good enough next year. And then I think with Tyler Huntley, offensive line is less of an issue. But I'm really worried about the defensive line, and I feel like Utah needs to go out and needs to get a defensive end recruit who can contribute tomorrow as a starter at defensive end for the University of Utah, which is asking a lot. There's this Hufunga guy who's a five-star athlete. That's the kind of guy they need to get, and they just put him on the edge and they say, go kill somebody because you're that good. And until they find that guy, I think that they're in trouble. Or what I wonder is if maybe we have a problem where some of these big guys who we thought were going to be defensive ends are actually going to evolve into defensive tackles, and we're going to see Tupai as a really good defensive tackle, or maybe even Hamilton as a defensive. I don't know if you've seen him out there on the field, but he's starting to look more like a defensive tackle than a defensive end. He's a big, big kid at this point. He was projected at like linebacker, wide receiver, tweener, but he's put on a lot of it. And he's not heavy. It's good weight, but he's, I would say Anai probably looks the most like an NFL player on the whole roster, but Devere is a close second there. Those guys, that's a big, scary-looking dude. It's interesting to stand next to a nine. feel like you need to change your shorts. He's big and scary.
So are you telling me you needed to change your shorts
no,
on a few
I didn't
Saturdays
actually,
at the games?
Metaphorically, though, he walked past me, and I said to myself, I had no idea he was that big.
Yeah. The interesting thing that I'm trying to be an optimist here, and I'm thinking this season did like an opposite day. So like
November woes
is going to be October. And so ladies and gentlemen, get ready for an awesome end of the season because we've got some raked opponents.
Going to
get bowl eligible. Like it's going to be amazing.
I admire your perspective, but my perspective on this is that October, November, all of this stuff is just random. You're never going to have a bad September because we play one FCS team, one Mountain West team, and BYU in September. So September's going to be 3-1 at worst.
It's
right?
A wash. Yeah.
Yeah. October, you're playing good teams. November, you're playing good teams. You got your 50-50 chance. Sometimes you're going to come up tails 4 times in a row. Is that a good thing? It kind of helps deal with the idea of the slump. But is it a bad thing? Yeah, because guess what? We could lose the next 4.
Let's slow down there, Joseph. But I will say, you know, in my, I don't know, part of my tweeting during the game or at the end of the game, I asked my Twitter followers, hey, what do you think the Utes need to do to fix this? Get animated again. And, you know, I'll say it was 254 people, 68% said hold tight. The other options were fire wit, fire a coordinator or two, or other, and I asked them to explain. Ultimately, as watching the last couple games and then listening to Whittingham this week, I agree with him. They've lost, as he called it, the edge. You know, there's no fire. You know, the only person I'm seeing fire from is Huntley after the game when he's using swear words and getting pulled by the Utah media staff.
Huntley looked good against Oregon. He is a good football player. He's going to be good for a long time for the Utes. I love how fast he came back from that injury. Like, you don't want a guy to get hurt and then to struggle the whole year and to come back really slow. You want him to get hurt and then just pop right back up and get better fast. And that suggests that he's going to be able to deal with those kinds of hits over the long term, that he's not quote-unquote injury-prone. And so that's a good thing. But honestly, I was watching that game, and I said there are two good players on this team right now. There's Tyler Huntley, and there's Darren Carrington, and that's felt like it.
No, I mean, Huntley was awesome. I mean, ultimately, I've heard people mention, like, what's the identity? We've lost our identity. We don't run the ball anymore. I have an identity for you. It's Tyler Huntley.
And that's
Huntley.
It. And that's Coach Taylor's identity, too. But he needs somebody else to make some plays. Yeah. And that, I mean.
Yeah, and I'll just add one thing is, and I said this multiple times on Twitter throughout the game, I actually, like, the red zone woes, it's execution, in my opinion. Which, according to Whittingham, is on the coaches because the players didn't execute. But this time, like, there are multiple plays in the red zone where there are touchdowns if one guy gets his block.
Yes.
Or,
yes.
Like, a couple
not.
Other yeah. things. Like I have no problem, at least in the Oregon game, I had no problem with play calling in the red zone. They even scored a couple touchdowns, but the problem is players got to hit their blocks. They got to make their plays. And if they ain't doing that, like, we're not going to score.
I think part of the problem is, and I think this is a big problem with when you sort of spiral into a red zone issue, is you see coaches start doing things differently in the red zone. They say, well, the red zone's different. We have to call different plays. We have to use different packages. We're going to throw Ippolito in there. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. When all of the data says good offenses score in the red zone, offenses that don't turn over score in the red zone. There's no data to support the idea that there are teams that have some magic trick to scoring in the red zone. When Oregon's offense is good, they score a lot of touchdowns. When Wisconsin's offense is good, they score a lot of touchdowns. It doesn't really matter what plays they call. None of that stuff matters. And I think if you stop saying, let's fix the red zone, and started saying, I'm just going to keep running the offense. I'm going to run the same plays because I get the idea. Well, there's less space back there, but you've got it. How big is that? Is the end zone in college? I think it's what, 15, 18 yards deep? That's a lot of space. That is plenty of space to run a whole play. And 90% of your routes are within that space anyway. And I just don't think that there is a huge difference between what works in the red zone and what works on the 50-yard line. But because teams act like there is, they start doing things that they don't practice as much. They start doing things that they're not as good at in an attempt to do something different. Instead of just saying, we're going to run RPO four times, and one of those times we're going to get 5 yards to get a touchdown. Instead of this fancy-schmancy stuff with Ippolito and tight ends, and just run the offense. It works everywhere else. If you got 80 yards out of a drive, you can get 10 more by doing the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, just so you know, 10 yards deep is how deep the end zone is.
10's plenty. That's 30 feet.
No, there's plenty of space.
You go stand out there, there's no
problem. Personally, this is the play I'm missing. My favorite play of all time in football. It's called a play-action pass, and you throw it to a tight end. And Ippolito, I'm sorry if I'm saying the wrong name, but he got a pass. Like, it was play-action tight end. Hey, that's what we need to see. Like, that's that kind of play gets a touchdown.
The 48-yard pass that got him to the 2-yard line against USC, that was a play-action pass to a tight end leaking off of a power run. So.
Oh, my gosh. Like,
it works. It works.
It's a great play.
And it's in the playbook. And you know how to run it. Yeah.
Run the darn thing. Mm-hmm. Or, like, I'm cool with, like, and then the other thing I guess I'm missing, and maybe I'm blind to it. I don't know because I'm not seeing it, but the dump-off pass to either tight ends or running backs. Like, the option that Huntley's running and getting hit, like, that could be avoided if there's a drop-off, you know?
I would say that's in there. I think that I've seen...
It doesn't happen, I guess.
I think that it doesn't happen quite enough, and I actually think that it's been able to... So sometimes you look at Moss's day, and he's had a ton of trouble running between the tackles, but once you get him out into space with the screen passes, and he'll get 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 yards of pass, and those are all short passes. They don't have him running wheel routes or anything just yet.
Joseph, I'm just glad you can count from 6 to 10. Good job. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
I don't have a little we need a sound engineer to do the what are those things? I don't know. Anyway, moving on. Let's talk, before I make more of a fool of myself, let's talk about UCLA, who has a lot of losses to a lot of really good teams. I'm going to tell you who UCLA is 4-4, Utah's 4-4. UCLA's losses are to Memphis, Stanford, Arizona, and Washington. You guys know Stanford, Arizona, and Washington are all having really good seasons. Memphis is...
Well, that was a road game. They're traveling across the country.
Memphis is 7-1.
Oh, wow. Dang.
Yeah, they're good. They're good. They beat Navy. They beat Houston.
Are you trying to scare Utah fans a little bit? This is like the fifth win on the schedule, and the question is, where's number six? It's not supposed to be that this game's a question mark.
No, this game is a question mark. In fact, my numbers have this as almost exactly a toss-up. I give Utah gets like a... has historically had about a 10% greater chance of winning under Kyle Whittingham than numbers say that they should. So I give them a 10% bump. And it's right around 50-50 here. UCLA can do a lot of things. Like the things that they don't do well, they really don't do well. But Josh Rosen is a really, really good player. And even though he's kind of the only player on UCLA's team, he's tough to stop. It's going to be all about Jalon Johnson and Julian Blackman and Casey Hughes and can they cover guys like
Marquise Blair,
like hanging off of guys, cover guys. I think they can. I love Jalen Johnson. I think he's one of the best players on the team. And Blackman's just as good.
I think Blair's going to make a hit on a wide receiver so hard that the wide receivers are going to be scared to catch it.
Yes.
And then Rosen's going to get sacked. And I will proudly wear a Sack Lake City shirt once again.
Oh, that would
I
be
did cool. propose we might need to burn it with this year just to try to, you know, exercise whatever demons have been created in the defensive line.
The mayor of Sack Lake City is Chase Hansen. The only time we get a sack is when we blitz somebody out of the secondary and they miss on a stunt or something like that. It's
there needs to be a coup in the Sack Lake City mayor.
Yes.
I mean, that shouldn't stand. I don't know. I don't know how much more to analyze this game. I feel like their weakness is running the ball on offense. Our weakness on defense is stopping the run game, so I'm not concerned about that. So just like you said, it's their pass game versus our secondary. I like our secondary. I think it's the strongest part of our defense. Unfortunately, we haven't been that good of a team this year, so how big of a strength is it? Well, we're probably going to find out on Friday. And then on the other side of the ball, you know, I just question of whether, you know, are we finally going to – is the whole offense going to be like Huntley, and we're going to score a bunch of points? Or are they going to try to establish the run game like everyone keeps talking about? Ultimately, I hate that it's considered a close game and that it's being listed as even on ESPN when I looked it up last. But I ultimately think home field advantage, Utah wins by a touchdown.
I think Utah's pass defense is actually good. They're giving up 6.1 yards per attempt, which is 19th in the country. They've given up 9 touchdowns. They've picked off the ball 10 times, so they're picking it off more than they're giving up a touchdown. Passer rating is 109. The defense is really good. Then you look at, like, if you follow Pro Football Focus, they do play by play, so they're measuring, you know, what is the passer rating into when the quarterback is throwing to a receiver covered by Jalen Johnson or covered by Julian Blackman. And these both of them are top 20 in the whole nation at those kinds of stats. Like when you start to really break it down and look at how good they are in coverage, they are really, really two very good cornerbacks. And I think it's going to take time for Josh Rosen to find guys. And the question is, can the defensive line make the clock tick? They don't even have to hit him, but they have to make the clock tick. They have to make him feel like, I have to throw the ball in 3.5 seconds or 4 seconds. I can't sit back here for 4.5 or 5 seconds. And I don't know if they can.
Yeah,
without
I mean, get the
changes
rush.
To personnel or changes to scheme. One thing that I'd like to see coaches do is start to use more stunts, more blitzes, more crosses to do different things to recognize this is a weakness and we have to change schematically and emphasize different things schematically to compensate for it. So we're gonna be bringing Marquise Blair down off the edge. We're gonna be bringing Chase Hansen off the edge, and we're gonna be dropping, you know, we're gonna be lining up a linebacker at defensive end and dropping him into coverage so that they don't know what's going on. Like you've got to start using more misdirection, not just with the secondary, which they do all the time, but now also at the line, because that's playing that vanilla, which usually works great for the Utes, is just not working this year, and it's because the players aren't good enough.
Yeah. Well, what's your pick?
I think Utah's going to win. I don't think they're going to win by a touchdown. I think they're going to win by 4. I think it's going to be 27-23. Late field goal kind of ices it a little bit.
So, sorry, Utah fans. Joseph and I just picked another win, which means
we're doomed.
It's bad. Sorry, guys.
Up until the Arizona State game, I was less than a touchdown off. I was a money, or less than a field goal off. I was about 2.2 points off. I beat the spread every single time, and with those last two games, I'm about 40 points off. Based
it's
on
called coming back to earth.
Yeah, really hard, really hard, man. I'm gonna be sore for a week.
Well, Thanks for listening, guys. We've got some new equipment. Hopefully you can enjoy some better sound quality. And we would love to hear your reviews. Throw us a review on iTunes, Google Play. We're looking to improve. And also email us, utetalk@gmail.com, and also on Twitter, utetalk@utetalkpodcast. Go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to Ute Talk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter @UteTalkPodcast or email @UteTalk@gmail.com.